You are listening to Meet the Thriller Author, the podcast where I interview writers of mysteries, thrillers, and suspense books. I'm Alan Peterson, an author of mysteries and thrillers myself, and it's been a privilege to interview amazing authors in the genre that I love to write and read. So far, I've interviewed over 200 authors, including thriller icons like Dean Koontz, Walter Mosley, Tess Gerritsen, Lee Child, and many more. You can find an archive of all my interviews with show notes, resources, book reviews, and a lot more over at my website at thrillerauthors.com. From there, you can also join my Thrilling Reads newsletter for book deals on great thriller and mystery books. So head on over to thrillerauthors.com and check all that out. In this episode of the podcast, number 199, you'll be meeting Dana Perry. Dana Perry is an award-winning author of crime fiction and a journalist in New York City, where he has had a long career as a top editor at the New York Post, New York Daily News, Star Magazine, and NBC News. As R.G. Belsky, he is a contributing writer for the Big Thrill magazine and has published 20 mystery novels, all set in the New York City media world. As Dana Perry, his first three novels in his new Nikki Cassidy series, starting with The Nowhere Girl, will be published on April 2nd. I had a great time chatting with Dana Perry on his writing process, on his incredible career as a journalist, including being part of the Netflix documentary on the Son of Sam serial killer from the 1970s in New York. It was a lot of fun to talk to him about that and a whole lot more. So stay tuned here for my interview with Dana Perry coming right up. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Alan, how are you? Good to be here.
You're fascinating with your background because you have had an extensive career in journalism. We're talking like with NBC, New York Post, the big boys.
You can put the New York Daily News in there too.
New York Daily News. So wow, so a lot of experience in journalism. So I'm kind of curious now. You have writing your own novels. Was that always in the back of your head while you were working as a journalist?
Well, it was not only in the back of my head, it was in the front of my head because I wrote a lot of novels while I was a journalist. It's funny because my last full-time job was a few years ago at NBC News where I was a managing editor. I had spent, you know, a lot of years, as you say, in journalism at the Post, at the Daily News, at Star Magazine, and eventually at NBC and NBC News. And when I stepped down and left, and I have written a series of books since then, you know, the traditional way people see it is, oh, yeah, that's great. Like you retired from journalism and now you're writing books. So you'd have more time to write books. Well, I'm like, no, that's not the way it happened at all. I've been writing books all the time I was in journalism. When I was back at the New York Post in the 80s, I sold my first novel. I sold a series of them in the 90s. Now, it is true. You know, I probably have done more writing now because I'm doing it full time. But I always loved doing it. And people would always say, well, you work all day in a newsroom writing news stories. Why in the world would you want to, you know, go home at night or get up in the morning and write a book? And the answer is because it's just a completely different thing. And I always say, like, as a journalist, my job basically was to get the facts right. I mean, I basically had to make sure that every fact was there and I had to do a lot of research, checking of things and all that. And as an author, I don't really do much of that at all. I just make stuff up, you know, and that is fun. And it's actually the two careers together have worked out really well for me. And, you know, I've used one with the other in the sense that most of my books are drawn in some way on my own journalistic experiences, either in the characters or in the stories and the plots. And I've covered, you know, an awful lot of big stories in my life, starting back with Son of Sam. And most of those stories have found their way in some form into my novels, thriller novels.
You're so used to writing on deadlines and all that, to have a book deadline is probably like...
Oh, I'm real good at... Yeah, I might not be the best writer in the world, but I'm real good at deadlines because I'm used to working at a daily paper. Well, at NBC, it wasn't even daily. Like, I worked in the digital website for NBC News. They had to get it up immediately. So if some big story happened, you just did it. So when a publisher, I've had publishers come in and they say, is there any possibility you could have a book completed for us by, you know, a year from this September. And I'll be like, I can give you this September if you want it. When you want it, just tell me. The Nowhere Girls, for example, which is the book which will be coming out April 2nd. You made a reference to it. I think I wrote that book in about 3 months. So, you know, I know a lot of people say, you know, it takes a year to write a novel, but that's not the way I do it. I sit down and, you know, and pretty much go through it every day. And if you just do the numbers, right? A thriller novel is generally around 75,000 words, the ones I do. And so if you write 1,000 words a day, which is like not that big a deal, you know, within 3 months, you've got a novel. Now, you still have to do the editing and stuff, but that's the way I work. So I bring a lot of my newspaper background to writing the novel. And again, I know there's a lot of great novelists who don't work like that, but deadlines are something I'm pretty familiar with.
Well, it's a good transition for you to full-time author with all the changes in journalism. It's kind of sad. All the newsrooms are shutting down.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of changes in publishing too, but you know, obviously, you know, and I, like I said, I went through some of them because I worked in print at the New York Post and New York Daily News. But when I went to NBC, I wound up working on their digital stuff, both with their local stations here in New York and around the country, and later with NBC News. And obviously, that's still very viable, the digital side of it. And TV, obviously, is still around too. But I thought when we were talking about the transition, the toughest transition I had from going to journalism to a novel is that I sometimes attempted to write a novel. We talked about deadlines, but I sometimes tried to write a novel the way I would write a news story. So I'm a tabloid journalist. I come from places like the Post and Daily News. We're taught all our lives, you got to put the lead in the first paragraph. You know, that's it. You don't mess around. Well, you know, you're writing a mystery novel. You can't put the lead on the first page or you don't have a mystery. One of the criticisms I got from editors, which is, I think, kind of unusual with a lot of writers, is like that I went too fast. You know, I think a lot of writers, it's like, no, you got to get to the point quicker. I tended to go from A to B to C really, really quickly because that's where my background was. So the one transition I've had to make from being a journalist to a novelist is to slow down, you know, like don't tell people so much in the beginning, you know, hold some of that stuff out. And you know, I know how to do that now, but it's an interesting thing you have to make a change on.
Do you outline your novels then before you start to write?
Never. No. So this is the traditional question. Of course, you know this.
Oh yeah.
Everyone asks this question: are you a pantser or are you a plotter? Every conference you go to, do you outline? And of course, there's no right or wrong answer to it. But my answer is absolutely not. I've never outlined a book in my life. There are many, many wonderful authors who do have said the same thing. I like Hank Felipe Ryan is a big author. I sat next to her at a conference. We were talking about it one day, and she's the exact same way. And, you know, we both were talking about how you're in the middle of a book and you're like, I have no idea how I'm going to get out of this, how I'm going to do, you know, you're just kind of flailing around aimlessly until you get it. There's other authors, great authors. I think Jeffrey Deaver, I believe, is one who, like, not only will outline, but will outline so extensively. I think he does outlines of, I believe he or one of somebody like him literally does a 200-page outline before they write the book. So if the book is 350 pages, you've pretty much written the book before, you know, so then you take the outline and it becomes the book. And so, you know, there's a lot of people who do it that way. I don't know when I start a book where I'm going to go with it. And I like the idea of letting the characters kind of breathe and surprise me. And many times I'll think a book is going to go one way, and then somewhere during the book I'll go, no, I'm going to switch it the other way. And, you know, a lot of people, when they read my books, one of the things that the feedback I get is, wow, you know, these, you've got so many twists and shocking turnarounds in the book. And I think one of the reasons I'm able to do that is because I'm as shocked by some of the twists as anybody. And I'll be like, oh, okay. Wow. Okay. That's a, let's do that. Why not? But again, you know, you can talk to 10 authors and I'll bet, you know, half of them would say they outline and half of them would say they not. Maybe a few would say, well, I sort of outline. But I do none of it.
Yeah, that's about right. Cause I've interviewed over 200 now and that's probably a 50-50 and in between.
I'll tell you a secret or whatever, another little thing that I do, which, I don't think all authors do. I know probably some do. I have gotten to the point where, so I've now written more than 20, I've published more than 20 books. And I've developed as a writer over the years, my techniques for writing have changed in the sense that when I write a book now, I don't necessarily write it in the order that you're going to read it. I don't necessarily do chapter 5 after chapter 4, or chapter 6 after chapter 5. I sometimes will approach it like you would a movie, like you're making a movie with a movie script. And, you know, I'm sure you know that when a director is making a movie, he doesn't necessarily make the climactic scene at the end. He might make it at the beginning or the, you know, you shoot different scenes and then you edit it, you put it together. I do some of that with my books. If I have myself, wow, I've got a great idea for an action scene, I'll just write that scene. I'll write that chapter, even though I'm not at that chapter yet. Same with a romantic scene. You know, if I have a relationship thing, I'll write that. And then I'll just, you know, I just kind of keep going with the book with the chapters not necessarily in order. And then I go back and obviously like a movie director would, I put them in an order. And, again, it's somewhat surprisingly, it works.
And what do you use? Do you use like Word or to do all this?
Here's the other unusual thing as a writer. I write all my books out in longhand on a legal pad, which is kind of crazy because I always worked on a computer when I was, in a newsroom. But in terms of being creative, I can't be creative on a computer. I don't know why. So I just sit with a legal pad and I write it out and then I put it onto, you know, to Word or what, you know, why use Word. And and that's it. But I don't, you know, I don't have like index cards all over on bulletin boards or anything like that. I just, I print everything out and then I read it. And I, you know, sometimes I'll do the old fashioned way of literally, you know, moving chapters around manually and go, well, I'll put this here, put that there. And it kind of works in the end.
Yeah. 20 books published. It's working.
Yeah.
And so I was kind of curious to know, were you a fan of thrillers and mysteries before you started to write these type of books?
I have been in, most of my life now because I started writing them. But the answer is no. I don't think I'd ever read a mystery or thriller like when I was growing up or in college or anything like that. I used to read like science fiction and things. I read a lot of nonfiction, you know. Politics, sports, things like that. But at some point early on, after I got out of college, I wanted to write fiction. I wanted to write short stories. I think I started out reading Ring Lardner, who was like around the turn of the century, but wrote all these great, funny short stories. And I started out trying to write some kind of, you know, Ring Lardner short stories. And one day, and this was long, long time ago, I was in a used bookstore and I'm going to give you my inspiration, which is the same inspiration many mystery thriller writers have. But I picked up a copy of The Big Sleep by Raymond Chandler.
Yeah.
And I never read Raymond Chandler. I didn't really know, I guess, who he was. I probably had heard of him. And I just bought it and I read it. And I just like fell in love with the whole idea. And I was like, okay, well, this is what I want. I could write this kind of a book. And so I immediately tried to write a book, which I think I'd best describe it as being a very bad imitation of Raymond Chandler. And so I kept reading, and then I discovered Agatha Christie, which is a completely different kind of book. But I read all the Agatha Christie books because, you know, I loved the story. You know, I mean, Raymond Chandler was about the character. With Agatha Christie, I mean, yes, you had Poirot and everything, but it was the twists and the stories, Ten Little Indians and all those. Then I went into Russ McDonald, another great mystery writer, read all his stuff. And then I just kept reading people like that. I discovered Robert Parker and Spencer and I basically drew upon all these things to kind of create my own kind of style and feel for a book. And I started writing part-time while I was a journalist. And eventually, it doesn't come easy, eventually I was able to publish my first novel, and then another one, and then a few more. So I've been doing this a long time, and I've been in the mystery thriller world a long time, and I've followed, you know, all the people that have come since, the Michael Conleys and the Sue Graftons and everybody, and I've used all of them to some degree to inspire me. But it was sort of a happy accident. If I hadn't picked up that Raymond Chandler book, we might not be sitting here talking today.
Yeah, I love his stuff too.
Oh yeah, well, my favorite book of all time is *The Long Goodbye*. I mean, that I thought was the best of all of them. The other thing about the mystery thriller field, I find, is that one of the things I love about it is that there's a structure to it. In other words, you know, if you pick up a novel, I mean, it might be a great novel, but it's kind of like all over the place, and you know, it. Talking about the trees and the sun, and it, you know, it's just not it. I don't mean to say that there are wonderful novels, but there's something about a mystery thriller that has this structure to it that I like. And I'm not the only person that this. It's funny. I got a chance to meet the late Sue Grafton, unfortunately, who wrote the Kinsey Malone Alphabet books, it's a wonderful series if anybody hasn't read it. And she was on a panel, and she was just talking about this. And she said basically all she read was mystery thrillers, and that someone once came to her and said, you know, you got to read a real novel. I mean, you know, as if, you know, mystery thrillers aren't really important. You need to read a real novel. And she said, so she took this novel, which was supposed to be really great, and she started reading it, and she got, you know, I don't know, 50 pages in, and she suddenly put it down and said, when is something going to happen in this book? You know, and that is the great thing about a mystery thriller, because something is always happening. I mean, if you're going 50 pages without anything happening in a mystery thriller, you got a problem. So I just love the genre. I mean, I read, I work for, I still do some journalism these days, but mostly like interviews and stuff of authors like you do. And I work for the Big Thrill magazine, which is put up by the International Thrillers organization here. And so I get a chance to not only interview a lot of major names, but, you know, I read their books. So I read most of the big thrillers that come out. And I love the field, which, you know, is good since I'm writing in it. I mean, it'd be very difficult, I guess, to write in a genre that you weren't enthusiastic.
Yeah, I'd imagine that would be tough. I was kind of wondering too now, because you have some of your insights on the Nowhere Girls. I'm just kind of curious, like, what inspired the story? What themes are you exploring in it? Can you tell us a little bit?
The Nowhere Girls is a bit of change. So most of my books, let me just give a little preface to people who don't know. So the author of The Nowhere Girls, which is me, is Dana Perry. My actual name, which I write other books under, is R.G. Belsky, but I've written a series of books under the Dana Perry name. Most of my other books have been set in New York City, because that's what I know, and they've been set in the New York City media world, because of that is what I know. The Nowhere Girls is completely kind of a different kind of an approach for me. My character is an FBI agent, which I've never been, and so I have no background in that. So I had to, you know, learn a little bit about law enforcement, FBI agents. She's a woman FBI agent who's based in Washington, where I've never worked, so had to learn a little bit about that. But most of the book takes place in a small town in southeastern Ohio. And that I do know something about because I'm originally from Cleveland, Ohio. And I went to college in southeastern Ohio in a small town. And so this is her hometown and she goes back there. And the premise of the book is that years earlier, her sister had been abducted and murdered and the killer had been put in prison and everybody thought the case was over. But now there's a new case that raises questions about what really happened to her sister 15 years ago. And she has to go back and solve the current case to unlock these secrets. So it was a really interesting book for me to write. And The Nowhere Girls refers to the fact that there are obviously other examples of other young girls like her sister who have been abducted and or murdered.
Were you familiar with Ohio, with the Cleveland area? But
yeah.
So how do
I went to school? I went to school in a town called Athens, which is southeastern Ohio, and I kind of patterned this town, which is fictional, after that town. So okay. You know, it's like that's why I say I like to write areas where I have some familiarity because I just think it comes across as more realistic.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a little easier. Then you don't have to do as much research either because I would imagine you already know the area. So,
and I feel pretty strongly about this, which is there's only so much research you can do. You know, yes, you can go on Google and look. I pretty much the only place locales I ever write about are places where I also wrote a series of books set on Martha's Vineyard because that's where I go vacation every year, you know. I could write a book. Like if I had to write a book, you're in San Francisco. If I had to write a book about San Francisco, I'm sure I could Google tons of information about San Francisco. But I certainly wouldn't be as confident in writing about it as I am in the books I write. And there's always the chance that, you know, you can't learn everything on Google. A lot of times you have to be there to get the feel of the city. And the example I always use, like in New York, which is like a very simple example, but there is there's a main street in New York, which is spelled Houston, like the city, Houston. So it looks like it should be Houston, except that's not what it's called. It's called Houston. You're never going to see that on Google. You know, you're going to read it and you're going to write. And so I actually, in my book, I have a character making a joke about that. You know, the difference between Houston and Houston. It's little things like that. And I'm sure you have a lot of stuff in where you are, too, that you know because you're there. And the last thing you want to do is in a book is to let the reader know that you're not really familiar with what it is you're writing about.
Yeah, it sucks you right out of the story when that happens.
I have had one or two occasions where I've literally put a book down because somebody had made a mistake. And, you know, the thing with that, too, is in a book, I mean, you can create fictional places or you can use real places, but it's got to be consistent. So like if I created, like when I was doing the media stuff, if I had my character working out of a fictional newspaper, the New York Bulletin or something, and I make it up, I can put that paper anywhere. You know, I can put it in Times Square or anywhere. If I have a character at the New York Daily News or the New York Times, I need to make sure that the location, I can't have that, you know, it at the Empire State Building. It's got to be where the Times or the Daily News or the Post is. So that's a tricky thing too, which is, and I tend to use a mix of them. I use some real facts in my books, but then I obviously use a lot of fictional things too.
Yeah. That's also always important in the mysteries and thriller books too, is the setting, right? I mean, like Connolly, LA and.
Absolutely. I guess there's sort of three important things in a book. One is the most important is the character itself. The other is the setting, and the other is the story. I sometimes think the story is the least of them because if you look at all the great characters, like you mentioned, Michael Connelly, L.A., Chandler, L.A., Robert Parker, Spencer, Boston, you know, it's just so Boston. I just think that's really, really important. And that's what I've tried to do in most of my books, most of which have been set in New York. But wherever you do, That setting is crucial, and you got to get that right. You know, like that's why you can't. That's why I'll never write a book about a character in San Francisco, because I've only been there once or twice, and I just don't think I don't think that would be a good. I don't think that would be a good book if I tried.
For the aspiring writers that are listening to this podcast, do you like write every day? Do you write from the same spot? I'm kind of curious about your
all of the above. I write every day. If somebody wants to be an aspiring writer, that is the number one rule I would tell them, is just sit down every day and write. You cannot wait until you're inspired by being creative, or you'll never write it. There are many days I sit down in the morning, and which is when I write, and I'm staring at a blank page and I have no idea what it is, you know, I'm going to write, and I force myself to put something down, even though it could be crap. And many times I do, and I think, oh, this is going to be terrible. And then I'll read it the next day, and a lot of times you'll be surprised at what you got, or it'll lead you to something else. But the number one rule is, if you want to be a writer, and I'm not the first person to say this, is you need to write. I've had, being in the media business, pretty much everybody I've ever worked with will come to me and say, oh, I want to write a novel. Like, I think I'd like to write a novel. And like, what do I have to do? And I'd say, well, you got to sit down and write it. And 99.9% of them never do that. They talk about it, but they don't do it. But the people who put out novels do what we just said, which is you sit down every day and you write. And if it doesn't work, then you just keep writing. In answer to the second part of your question about how the specifics of how I do it, I almost never write. Like right now, I'm in my home office, but I hardly ever write from here or from home. I like to work in public spaces, and I think a lot of this has to do with all my years in the newsroom, with the noise and the hubbub. But I love people around and talking. So I write most of my stuff actually in coffee shops. I'll go to a Starbucks or whatever and sit, and people will be screaming around me. And for me, that's inspiring. But I've written a lot of places. I've written, you know, on the beach. I've written on the subway. You know, I've written obviously on trains or planes. That's just me. But I very rarely get up, sit in my house, and write at a computer. I take the a legal tablet, and I sit somewhere, or sit in a park, or sit on a bench, and all this kind of stuff. But again, that's just me. Everybody writes differently, and there's no good way or bad way, as long as you're producing a book.
Yeah, he's got a vision of all the president's men with the newsroom with Robert Redford and Dustin Hoffman.
Well, that was obviously the big inspiration for so many people that went into journalism. One of the funny things is, like, you know, everybody thinks that's like what every day in a newsroom is like. And of course it isn't, you know. Newsrooms can sometimes be pretty boring too, but that's the, that was kind of the high point of journalism.
Yeah. So I got curious too, before I let you go too now. So Nikki Cassidy is the protagonist of The Nowhere Girl. So I was just kind of wondering if you could walk us through her development and how you worked getting her onto the book.
Well, there's something else I need to tell you about her, but I have written, like I say, more than 20 published novels now. The Nowhere Girls will be my 22nd, actually. And the vast majority of them have had female characters. And the reason for this is I've worked with a lot of really great women in my media days. But I just find it gives me more opportunity to make the character come alive as a woman, because with a man, a lot of times I just feel like I'm doing traditional stuff with, you know, that have been done in the past. Certainly when I started out writing characters, the role of women, certainly in the media, was a lot different. For a woman to be covering a murder story was very unusual. Most women were, you know, relegated to covering cooking or features and stuff like that. It wasn't a very fair situation. And there weren't a lot of women characters in mysteries at the time, until people like Janet Ivanovich and Sue Grafton and came along, Sarah Paretsky. And but so in the beginning, I loved writing female characters because you could have so many more obstacles. You could have the boss who says, oh, I don't want a woman covering this. You know, you belong in the kitchen or whatever. And then you can have her, you know, sticking it to him and coming up with the big story. But even now, I just I don't know. I love writing what I refer to as, you know, like a kick-ass woman. And, you know, it's like Kinsey Malone is like that. Stephanie Plum from Janet Ivanovich is like that. Vera Warshawski, Kinsey Malone was like that. I love those kind of characters. And that's what I've tried to do with Nikki Cassidy, to create that kind of woman character. She's in her early 30s. You know, she's got a troubled life on some level with the loss of her sister years ago. She doesn't have like a steady romantic life, and her life is her job, and she throws herself into her job. And that just allows me a lot of opportunities to I think, make her an interesting character. You know, one of the best things that anybody can ever say to me as an author is not even so much of, oh, the book was great or the twist was great, but wow, I love Nikki Cassidy. She's terrific, you know. Now, having said that, I should point out, and I'm not even sure if you're totally aware of how this is going to come out, Alan, but there's not one Nikki Cassidy book, but there's actually three Nikki Cassidy books that are going to be coming out in April. The company that is publishing them, Bookature, has come up with this idea of putting out a succession of thrillers at the same time. So The Nowhere Girls has a story that will end. I mean, she will solve the story by the end of the book, but there's an overriding kind of story that goes on to another book, which is called Last One to Die. And then same thing there, she'll solve the mystery, but then there'll be another overriding thing that will take you into a third book called The Only Ones. And, you know, the idea here, I think, is sort of like what we all tend to do on TV these days, which is binge watching, where you finish one episode and then it's suddenly you're in the second episode. You don't really want to watch it, but there it is, you know. And, you know, the idea, and this isn't my idea, this was the idea that they came up with, was that, you know, people read one book and they don't want to wait a year to see the next one. They originally were going to do one a month, and they came up with the idea to put them out simultaneously. So on April 2nd, The Nowhere Girls will come out, but at the same time, the other two books also will be released, and literally you could read them all. Unlike a lot of my books and series, this is a series where you really would want to read them in order, because there is an over, you know, I'd compare it. I don't know if you remember like the TV show Monk, where he was constantly looking for the killer of his wife through the whole series. So he would solve the crime, but he was always still on the overall thing of who killed his wife. That's kind of what I've tried to do in these three books. So she's still looking for answers, even though she finds a lot of answers. So it'll be an interesting publishing experience to have three books come out at once. Now, the downside of all this, of course, is for me, is that it required me to write three books at one time. So, I mean, I basically had to come up with almost, 1,200 pages of copy. And I wound up doing that, I think, in about 15 months. So, you know, an awful lot of effort went into this. It's not one book, it's three books, but it's fun. And because I like the character, it was fun to live with her all that time.
Oh yeah, I didn't know that. I just thought Nowhere Girls was publishing on the second.
Needs to start with Nowhere Girls, because that's the beginning. Yeah. But when you get to the end of Nowhere Girls, you're going to have there's going to be a link to, well, wait a minute, what happens now? And then you go. Now I just want to make clear, it isn't like I'm going to have a crime story that leaves you unanswered questions. You know, she is going to solve the big crime story in each book. But you know, she's not going to have all the answers, and there's going to be a reason why, hopefully, you want to keep reading what she does next. And all three books are going to basically be in the, you know, in the same, or they are in the same setting, which is this small town in Ohio, which is, you know, it's kind of unusual because you're going to have a lot of missing girls and a lot of people dying in a little town. It's going to be a little bit like, you know, Jessica Fletcher. And yeah, Kevin Cole, where, you know, the whole town has 2,000 people and 500 of them have died, you know, but it's called what? Suspension of Belief. So
the fun part.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, it will be fun. And so, you know, but I know The Nowhere Girls by Dana Perry, not by my real name, The Nowhere Girls by Dana Perry is on presale now. And as of tomorrow, because today's Thursday when we're doing this, so when this is recorded, it'll already have been done, I realize, because it won't, but it's going on presale tomorrow. In February, which is when we're talking. And so, you know, very soon, anybody can order any of the three.
Exciting.
And they're available they're primarily available online at a great, incredible price, and also in Audible.
Okay. I was going to ask you if there's going to be more books, but we know there is. So what are you working on now? Can you tell us? Or
I'm going to like take a nap, I think. Yeah.
Three books at once. Yeah.
Well, no, I have this other series written under my real name, RG Belsky. And I do want to mention that. And it's about a TV journalist in New York called Claire Carlson, another woman character, another kick-ass woman character. She's different than Nikki, but there are some similarities. And it's called Broadcast Blues. And so she works in the media and solves crimes. This is the sixth book in that series that just came out, and that just came out this past January. So I've been really involved in that too. So you know, because once you get to the sixth book in a series, you really gotta make sure that everything is in line with the first five books. So, So I've been very happy doing her too. So, you know, hopefully there'll be more Claire, and hopefully more Nikki Cassidy in the future. But it's gonna take quite a bit of my time to be dealing with the three books at once now when they come out. And you know, hopefully there'll be people who will sit and read them all the way through.
Yes. Oh, that'll be fun. I do enjoy that. I'm one of those type of readers too. I'm like, oh, is there another one? So,
well, don't you do it? I mean, like with TV, I mean, I do it all the time. I just did it with, like, you know, Reacher and and a lot of the times, you know, you don't plan to sit down and watch the whole thing, but you do, or you watch, you know, like sometimes they don't do all of them, but they'll do four, you know, they'll drop four episodes at once, you know, like Bosch, I think, was like that. I think they dropped four episodes at the beginning, then they do two a week or something. But, you know, it's very hard not to watch one of the Bosch series and not go, you know, when it tells you in 15 seconds, you're going to go to the next episode. You know, it's very hard to sort of like, no, I don't want to see that. You just kind of, then you say, well, I'll just watch the beginning. And this happened to me a lot. And you watch the beginning and then you sort of get hooked. And you're like, okay, well, I got to watch it a bit more. So, so much of our society has, you know, accepted that now with the Netflix and Amazon Prime and all the others. So it'll be an interesting thing. I think this has been tried or is being tried by some other publishers, but it will be an interesting experiment. And again, I'll make clear, it isn't like I came up with this idea, but it'll be fun.
All right. So where can the listeners find you online? Do you have a website, right?
I do. It's called RG Belsky, which, as I say, is my main author name. And so if you go to www.rgbelsky.com, most of the info on me is there. I'm on Facebook also as both RG Belsky and Dana Perry. I have you can look me up on Twitter as Dana Perry or R.G. Belsky. So, you know, one or other of the names, you'll find stuff on me. And then, you know, if you want to Google me for any reason as a journalist, you'll find a lot of big stories that I covered. And I mentioned Son of Sam, and I should just say this because it's kind of fun. But about a year or two ago, I was part of a Netflix documentary on Son of Sam. And it was funny because for all the books you write, there's nothing to get you attention more than being on TV. I mean, you know, I had like all these people on the street stopping me and saying like, oh my God, you're on television, you know, whatever. And I just found out Netflix is doing another Son of Sam documentary coming up, and I'm about to shoot some scenes for that. So it'll be fun. But, you know, kind of going back into the days of the big crimes I covered, you know, Son of Sam, OJ, JonBenet Ramsey, that's always interesting. And like I said, a lot of the elements of those are what become the elements of my fictional books too.
You know, just dawned on me too that I thought you looked very familiar, but I couldn't place it.
Probably from that. Documentary,
yeah. Cause I watched that documentary and I remember they interviewed journalists that were in the case, covering the case.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was very young at the time, but it was, it was the '70s. And if anybody was around then they knew how, I don't think there's ever been a serial killer case quite like that. I mean, whether it be Ted Bundy or whoever, because you basically had a city. Well, you know, you guys had Zodiac, obviously, but Son of Sam seems to be the one that everyone, you know, when you're writing serial killer books, that somehow that it's like that kind of thing, a crazy guy, you know, killing women on the streets of the city for no reason, the city living in terror. And the other fascinating thing, it was a horrible things, obviously, but unlike most crimes, the craziest thing about Son of Sam, of course, is that there's no real motive to it. Not even sex, you know, like with Ted Bundy, you know, he would have sex sometimes with the corpses and, you know, they can be sick motives. Son of Sam, there was no even sexual thing. It was like he just shot women for no reason. And as an author, I do find that interesting. And it's something I've tried to use in some of my books, which is, you know, in many ways, that's the scariest kind of criminal, the criminal that there's no reason for what they do. So you can't, you know, in the traditional crime, somebody wants to kill somebody because they want, you know, it's like a love interest or money interest, or somebody wants something, or they want to make sure the person doesn't talk. Or there's always a motive. A motiveless crime is really hard to wrap your head around. And that's really what Son of Sam is. It's just a guy who, for whatever reason, got some sort of thrill out of killing women on the street.
Yeah. And then it was so bizarre, too, because then he blamed it on his neighbor's dog. And then that whole it was just.
Well, that's not. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, there's so many stories about that, some of which I talked about and I'll be talking about again. But, you know, he wasn't really known as Son of Sam until really much later. He was originally the .44 caliber killer. And the Son of Sam came because he left a note for Jerry Breslin at the Daily News you know, talked about the neighbor Sam's dog. And so the name came Son of Sam. And the other thing about Son of Sam, of course, is it isn't like, you know, from the minute he started killing everyone, oh, we got this terrible serial killer. He killed a number of people for a number of months before anyone put it together, because, you know, there weren't a lot of the techniques now that people have with ballistics or whatever. And there was a certain moment several months into some of the killings where police suddenly were like, oh, my God, we think these three murders over a period of 6 months were all done by the same guy. And that was the moment that the serial killer came alive. So those were all the things that I lived through as a newspaper man, culminating in the incredible night when he was caught.
Fascinating. Well, that's interesting. Yeah, you got a lot of a background to pull from for your novel, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, I write this a lot. People always say to me, where do you get your ideas? And my answer always is, hey, all I did was go to work in the newsroom every day. There were a lot of ideas there. And I don't know that I've ever written a book that wasn't inspired by some kind of a real life crime. You know, they call it, you know, ripped from the headlines. And that's what I do. I sometimes it may not be so obvious, but all the, you know, I wrote one book about a celebrity murders, and I don't know they make the connection, but the inspiration for that was covering the OJ trial for like a year, you know, which was the ultimate celebrity murder case. So I've always been using these real life events to come up with fictional versions of the stories.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me about your books and your career. It was great having you on the podcast.
Thank you, Alan. It's fun to be here.
Thank you for listening to Meet the Thriller Author. If you enjoy the show, please take a moment to rate and review it on your preferred podcast platform. Your feedback makes all the difference in connecting with fellow thriller and mystery fans, and it helps them find this podcast on the podcasting apps like Apple and Spotify. For show notes, transcripts, and archives of hundreds of author interviews, please go to thrillingreads.com. From there, don't forget to sign up for the Thrilling Reads newsletter for exclusive access to giveaways, discounts, and astounding thriller and mystery book recommendations and reviews. Check out my thriller books at alanpeterson.com. And remember, that's Peterson with an E, not an O. Until next time, keep the pages turning and keep the mysteries unraveling.